This episode of The Luminaries on Deep in the Weeds is proudly supported by Deputy, rostering and timesheets without the usual chaos.
People, when they think of our restaurants, you know, they're thinking about quality food and a really good beverage offering and friendly and pretty relaxed, informal service. And now as we sort of, you know, as we grow, that is basically the DNA of our restaurant group, of those features.
This is The Luminaries on the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. The conversation on wine in Australia has changed exponentially over the last decade or so. It's not only changed the way we perceive great drinking experiences, but it's changed the dining experience too. Food and wine matches can, in the hands of the right people, become greater than the sum of their parts. How has that conversation evolved, and where is wine in the restaurant setting headed? Nick Hildebrandt is the co-owner of the Bentley Group. Nick, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You've been heavily influential in the direction that wine has gone in restaurant settings in Australia. How much has wine in restaurants changed over the last decade?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. When I was first starting my career, it was very different to what it is today. And it was much more limited choice. And today is really, really different. It's been, you know, quite eye-opening. But, you know, different eras, different times, different, you know, winemaking, winemakers, influences, fashion, you know, it's all combined to change it. And, you know, where we are today, I think it's great. Where we were, you know, 20 years ago when I first started, that was interesting as well. You know, there was obviously wine was a lot cheaper then, a lot more bang for your buck, a lot of better value, I guess. Whereas now it's becoming, wine is you know, I guess it's always been, like a commodity in a way. Now some wines, you know, you're looking at $10,000 a bottle cost, and you know, and it's you know, some of those wines are becoming sort of for the elite, which is, you know, it has become a little bit elitist, which is, you know, that's not great to see. But I guess sort of going back all the way to the beginning, it was, you know, I guess wine has sort of always been a thing that sort of, you know, well off people have drunk, you know, like it or hate it, but that's the way it is. But you know, there's no reason why, you know, we can't change that, and that's sort of the role of, you know, sommeliers and wine journalists and writers to you know, open it up to different audiences and to give, you know, a greater variety of people a taste of wine and a love of wine, and not just make it, you know, for the sort of the rich and the powerful, because that's, you know, that's not how it should be.
One of the hallmarks of your career is the fact that you started conversations about wine for people. You opened up new doors for them. You sent them on new paths. What was it like in the early days of Bentley, when Brent was doing his sort of wild things in the kitchen and you were sort of presenting some pretty wild things in bottles in the front of house, trying to start that conversation? Do you have any stories from then?
Yeah, look, I guess we when we opened Bentley originally, the wine list was pretty alternate. It was, you know, a lot of imported wines, which there was a bit of backlash towards, but it wasn't that we had a problem with Australian wines. It was just that there was a lot of interesting wines from overseas, which we thought were good with the food and which we were inspired by, and they were a little bit left to centre, and that's, you know, how we always positioned Bentley. We wanted it to be an experience where you went into a restaurant, into a hospitality venue, and you could not get it anywhere else, and you could not get it at home. It couldn't be a dish that you could easily cook at home, and it couldn't be a wine that you could easily buy. You couldn't go up to your local vintage cellars and buy it. So we were trying to position ourselves as doing, you know, modern, interesting food and wines to match, and you know, it was the whole thing about hospitality and restaurants, it is an escape from your general life, isn't it? It's like going to a movie. When you're going into a restaurant, you're not necessarily trying to escape, but it's a different experience, and it's not one that you wouldn't normally have. So that was the reasoning. And we did have a lot of interesting, unusual wines, but like Brent with food, it was the wine for me, for my palate anyway, never got on the wine list unless it was delicious. And I think Brent had a similar philosophy with the food. And even if he was experimenting with gels and foams and all that molecular sort of carry on, as long as the dish tasted delicious and you could eat it, it didn't really matter. And that's always been my philosophy with wine. I don't particularly care, who makes it, how it's made, where it's made, what the label looks like, what the closure looks like, as long as it's delicious and it has a bit of a story behind it, then I'm likely to buy it. And I'm looking for wines that are delicious, but also sometimes they may challenge me. So back in the day, that was, yeah, it was a lot of people, it was eye-opening. But at the same time, I think we were on the sort of the cusp of a wave back then, especially with wine. And when we opened up Bentley, like the natural wine movement hadn't really started in Australia. It had been going in France and Europe for a while. And we were one of the first early adopters to get what was termed natural wine into our wine lists. And we could feel that the whole movement was starting, and we were a key player early on, and we sort of brought it into the mainstream. And that's that was sort of we felt like that was one of our roles to do that as well. And now you look at where things are now, and that the wine that we started with at Bentley's, is fairly, there's a lot of wine lists around town that sort of look very similar to that. But back in the day, we were the only one with a wine list which resembled anything like that. So, it's come a long way. It really has.
Tell us about those early days. You were both really challenging people's perceptions in the realms, but Bentley was a really casual, accommodating space. It was very welcoming. There was no tablecloths. It was the start of something new for Sydney and Australia. What was the adversities of the early days of trying to get that across, but also be viable?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was challenging. It was we always said it was fine dining. It was a fine dining food and wine experience with fine dining service, but without all the fine dining bits and pieces you get, like tablecloths and the fussy service and the high prices to an extent as well. So it was interesting, because the other thing which was a challenge for us is we were in an old pub, and so some people were thinking it was a pub as well. They were coming in and going, "What is this food? And where is? Can I just get a schooner of VB? And can I get a schnitty?" And it was like, "No, you can't have any of that. Can I just have a drink? Aren't you a bar?" And it was. It took a while for us to get get our reputation, I guess, and for people to sort of understand what we were trying to achieve, because at the time it was pretty new for Sydney, and that the casual fine dining. But I think there were sort of a few other restaurants doing similar things at the time, and that sort of became the new normal, I guess.
The Bentley became the foundation for the many restaurants that you have now. Was there a key moment when you and Brent realized that you could build a group and build on the reputation that Bentley was receiving?
No, not really. It sort of came, we've got five restaurants now, and it was pretty organic. I mean, we spoke in the early days about opening other venues, but Bentley was all encompassing and time consuming, and like every percentage of our energy and passion went into Bentley, and it gave us very little time to do anything else. So it actually did take us quite a while to open something else. We opened in 2006 Bentley, and then we opened Monopole in 2012. So it took us 6 years. And then Yellow not long after, and Cirrus not long after that. So, you know, we're sort of 15 years old now, and we've got 5 restaurants. But, you know, yeah, it was, it, going back to the question, it was, yeah, it sort of feels easier now. Like to open the second restaurant was a big thing, and the third was a big thing. And it, you know, we sort of have a, you know, the Bentley Group is like a brand, and it's a sort of foundation for us, and all the restaurants have a reputation, but they're all aligned to our group, and you know I would like to think that people think about it as a, you know, people when they think of our restaurants, you know, they're thinking about, you know, quality food and, you know, a really good beverage offering, and, you know, friendly and pretty relaxed, informal service. So that's, you know, that I guess that's the blueprint of what we've tried to achieve now as we sort of, you know, as we grow, that is basically, you know, how the DNA of our restaurant group are those features.
Food and wine matching is something that the Bentley Group is renowned for, your ability to partner with the creativity of Brent Savage. Has there been any times when that's been really difficult to find the right wine to match with his food?
No, his food is, you know, I think his food's pretty generous and pretty good to match with wine. It is not, I mean, there have been occasions with, you know, there was a, back in the day, there was a anchovy dish, which you probably would remember. It was the white anchovy with pistachio praline. So you had, you know, one of the most acidic, vinegary things you could ever, you know, put in your mouth, and then you cover it in pistachios and a praline. So it's savory, salty and sweet. That was probably challenging. But that was the best thing of that was just a cold beer, and it was pretty simple. So, you know, it's not always Venice, and fortunately there's so many more options out there. Like back in the day when we first started, you know, it was you know, just trying to match it to wine, but now you can match it to beer, and you know, there's some amazing sake being brought into the country, and there's, you know, there's non-alcoholic beverages and, you know, cocktails. So there really is no limitation, and you know, you can match sort of any dish with anything, really, and that's part of the fun with it. You know, when we're generally speaking, when we try to match a dish, a new dish with a new wine, we'll generally get the dish and we'll have, you know, 4 or 5 different options, not all of them wine, but and then when we in our head we sort of think we know which one's going to work, and then quite often we're wrong, and you know, so that's, you know, that's how you go about doing a match.
You mentioned that the second restaurant and the third restaurant were hard to open as you started to build the group. What were some of the failures and lessons that you learnt in the early days when you opened Monopole and Yellow?
I guess, you know, once you go from being a small restaurant where it's owner-operated, and growing to 2, 3, 4, you realize that you can't be there all of the time, which is back in the day at Bentley, myself and Brent were on every single service. So, you know, if anything went wrong, it was, you know, it was completely down to us. But as we grew, you know, you can't be there every service. So you have to empower managers and staff to run it for you, and essentially they become, you know, the representatives of not only the company but of yourselves. And so if you've got a rude waiter or you know, a chef doing the wrong thing, it sort of becomes you know, it represents what you are. And so that back in the day, some of those things would happen, and it was, you know, some of the challenges we had We're not having, you know, the right person at the right place. But the challenge really is about getting good people and empowering them and motivating them and, you know, getting them to feel a sense of ownership of the business that they're operating when we're not there.
Has it been difficult for you to relinquish and let go and not be there all the time?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. In the early days, yeah, it was, you know, you did have the, you wanted to be there and you'd have a regular in there, but you were at another restaurant and so on and so forth. So, and, you know, like, I guess anyone who owns their own business is to a degree a bit of a control freak. So, yeah, sometimes not everything went the way you want it to, but, you know, you just have to sort of let go of those emotions, I guess, and trust the people that you are working there are doing the right job, and ultimately you need to give people direction and motivate them and you know if there is a problem we need to address it and change it.
The Bentley Group is known for 5 very different offerings. Tell us about when you create a concept and create a new restaurant, are you mindful to make sure it's nothing sort of like what you've done before, but still carries your DNA?
Yeah. The DNA is definitely critical. I think we think that all of our restaurants in a way are similar, but they are, you know, generally speaking, they are a different offering. So yeah, there is, you know, when you're thinking of the concept, you're thinking of how it can be different to your other brands or other eateries, so to speak. And for us, I guess the main thing that we think of whenever we're starting a new business is always about the location and the site. And you know, that happened at Cirrus. We were offered a site on the water at Barangaroo, and we thought, okay, we'll do it. Seafood restaurant, you know what I mean? It just made sense. And then we moved Monopole. We saw a site for Monopole in the city, and we thought that would make an amazing, wine bar bistro. And I thought, well, that would be Monopole. And, you know, and then, yeah, Yellow was a similar thing. We changed that to vegetarian and vegan. And, you know, Bentley, where it is now, it's in a historic, Art Deco building, which is in the CBD, and we thought that could, you know, we could elevate Bentley to a different experience in that site. So, yeah, it comes down to a lot of it does come down to the site, and then you look at the market and see what you know you think the market would want, and also what you actually want to do as well. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we could look at a thousand different sites and go, wow, that would be a great chicken shop or, you know, a great whatever. And it's like, well, we don't actually want to do that. So, you know, why would you bother? There's a number of factors when it comes down to it, for sure.
This episode of The Luminaries on Deep in the Weeds is proudly supported by Deputy, helping managers and staff do their best work.
At Deputy, we're on a mission. We're on a mission to simplify shift work for every cafe, every restaurant, every bar, every business owner, every dishy, every waiter, every cook, every sous chef. This is the industry that will thrive with Deputy.
For more information, go to deputy.com. When was your first steps in hospitality? What sort of lured you to a career in it?
I guess I just, like so many other people, just fell into it. I was at university doing science. Really didn't have much motivation for that. And I was working at the Basement, actually, at the time, which was the famous jazz club down in Circular Quay. And, you know, I was 18 and I started off as a kitchen hand, I think. Then I went to a glassy. Then I was a bartender. And then that was basically it. And then the rest was sort of history. I quit uni and I started doing hospitality management at the Hotel Intercontinental. And then I got placed into the Treasury, which was a Tony Wilson restaurant at the time. And, you know, I was, yeah, would have been like 19 or 20. And, yeah, that was it. You know, there was a, obviously at the time, there was a three-hat restaurant and, you know, it was a massive wine culture within the restaurant. I met Andrew Gard there, who's a good mate and, you know, a very influential wine importer and wine identity in Australia as well. So we trained together. And basically, you know, I got the wine bug and from there the rest was history. I just went from restaurant to restaurant overseas to London for a little bit, worked for Marco, Pierre White and a few of those people. And came back to Sydney and worked for Mark Best for a few years. And then Brent and I met there and then we opened Bentley. So it was, yeah, nothing was really ever planned. It just sort of happened and, you know, I worked with some really great restaurateurs and chefs and sommeliers and a lot of influential people who helped me sort of shape my palate and the career.
Mark Best, Marco Pierre White, Tony Bilson, all renowned chefs. Who's been the main influences on you and your craft?
Yeah, I don't know if I would have I was thinking about that the other day. I don't know if I have, like, if there would be one singular person or chef or sommelier or anybody who has had the biggest impact. I think it's just like it's a sum of all parts and, yeah, obviously, particularly restaurateurs, you know, influence you in a big way. But I think, yeah, I think just a collective bunch of people has basically sort of shaped me to who I am today. And they're not even necessarily, you know, within the industry. You know, there's people from, you know, family and friends and all sorts of, you know, other people influence who we are. And so I guess to answer, do you just basically sort of everybody I've sort of really ever worked for has influenced me.
Food and wine experiences can be greater than the sum of their parts. Has there been any bit been sort of key moments for you, food and wine experiences that have inspired you and you've carried into your career?
Yeah, like there have been definitely, yeah, absolutely, all the time, and that happens all the time from every day. And I wouldn't say there was one particular experience, one particular meal that I had, one particular tasting menu which had, you know, amazing wines. I think it's just a collective of different experiences. You know, I remember one time I had a velouté or something like that, of a smoked salmon broth or something like that, and I was trying to pair it with a white wine, and I ended up trying just throwing a red Burgundy Pinot to see what happened, and that, you know, it just like worked unbelievably well, and that was like a revelation to me. And another time we were at a restaurant and we were having a dish, and it was just like so overseas, and it was actually, the dish was awful, but we had a white Bordeaux, and the saltiness and the white Bordeaux, it was just an absolute perfect match. And you know, that was like a mistake which worked well. And often those sort of mistakes, you know, you actually learn a lot from them. It's not necessarily about what works with things, it's not what not works with things. So I think you probably learn just as much about you know, what doesn't work with a particular dish, or when you're trying to match something, as to what you do when it actually matches perfectly. So yeah, little moments like that. But you know, it wasn't a moment where I had Krug champagne and caviar and I thought, oh my god, oh, the greatest match in the world, like, you know, that kind of stuff. No, doesn't really happen. It can, you know, it could be a packet of Smith's crisps and a German Riesling. You know what I mean? Like, another one I like is blue cheese and beer. I think it's the greatest combination in the world. So yeah.
Technology influences everyone's day-to-day lives these days. What role does it play in the running of the Bentley Group?
Oh, it's huge. And, you know, going back to when we first started, yeah, the technology wasn't really there. We, you know, the only technology we had was a computer and a point of sale, really. But, you know, now it's everywhere, like from, you know, things like your musical playlist from Spotify and you know, you've got your point of sale, which talks to everything in your venue. It talks to your reservation system and it talks to your bank and everything seems to be linked. And in terms of technology when we first started Bentley, I don't think there wasn't even – Facebook may have just started, and you know what I mean. And there was no social media. It was all sort of any kind of review or anything like that was always published in print. And you know, I remember when I was working at Mark Restaurant, we would wait if we had a review, we'd go to the pub, we'd go to the courthouse or Kinsella's. And wait for the paper to come out at midnight, and that would be on Monday night. We'd get the review at midnight on Tuesday, and everybody used to do the same thing. Is like, and back in the day, if you got a good review, it'd last, you know, be 12 weeks of solid bookings. And these days, you know, you read your review online, basically the minute it's written, and you know, if it's a great review, you might get 2 weeks of bookings out of it. And, you know, social media and Instagram and Twitter and, you know, things like that seem to have a bit more of an influence. It, maybe not a bit more of an influence. I think the media and the written media and the online media still have a part to play, but it's, you know, there's a lot of influence around, you know, your Instagram handle and how that affects your business and so on. And so, yeah, it's changed an enormous degree.
It's been a really hard year and a half for the restaurant sector, but we're in a situation now where with high vaccination rates, society's going to open up again. What's some of the real sort of challenges that the Bentley Group is facing as it looks to open up again?
I think, like everybody in our industry, the staff shortages is a real one, and you know, probably sounds a bit boring, but that's actually the truth. You know, we're struggling to get staff for all our venues, and in fact, we can't really even open them as much as we would like to. So, you know, they're all going to be sort of closed 2 days a week, and that's not because of us thinking that there isn't a market for them. It's just that, you know, we just don't have enough staff to cover the hours. And so the sooner we get our borders reopened, I mean, you know, we get some international, you know, backpackers back into the country, the better, because, you know, yeah, we just don't have the people to staff hospitality, which is kind of sad, because it's, I feel like, you know, I think people, sort of the new generation of 20-year-olds are coming through, and they basically don't want to have a career in hospitality. And I think you can have a great career in hospitality. And I think that, I know that a lot of people are trying to address that issue, but it's just, yeah, it just seems to restaurateurs and people in our sector that, you know, yeah, quite often, the younger generation are not really interested in this as a career path.
This pause that you've had leading up to opening, has that allowed you to look at the structure of the business differently, and will we see a different type of Bentley Group moving forward?
I think the first lockdown we'd really, you know, looked internally as to what was working and what wasn't working, what was relevant and what wasn't relevant. And you know, it was such a shame when we closed down in June, because you know we were really firing. All the restaurants were busy. We'd moved Monopole into the city. It was going really well. Yellow was really great. Bentley, we had upped the ante a little bit. Everything was going along swimmingly, and then it all came to a grinding halt, and the lockdown went for a lot longer than everyone thought it would. So we're reopening with new menus. Obviously, when we were going into winter back in June, so now we're into sort of spring, summer's coming on. So the menu is a lot lighter, a lot fresher. You know, there's pretty much 100% new menus across the board. All the wines by the glasses are changing. You know, we've been buying a bit of wine and so on, so the wine will be still pretty robust. So no major changes at all. But we're looking forward to getting back there. And it feels like there's like a lot of energy within the staff, and everyone's itching to get back into it. So I feel like it's going to be a very busy sort of festive season. And then we'll see what happens next year. But I think we'll. Hopefully we can, we can keep on powering through.
You and Brent have spent over a decade working together. It's been an incredible combination. How do you work together? What are the different roles? Does someone look after the accounts and catering? Tell us how you work together.
So the structure of the business. So, yeah, I guess we have a central office. We have, two or three people doing accounts. We have an operations manager. We have a reservations manager. We have someone doing marketing. Then Brent has Aiden Stevens, who has been with us for over 10 years. He's the exec group chef. So he's Brent's right-hand man. And then we have, each of the restaurants have a restaurant manager, an assistant manager, and a sommelier. So there's a sort of a structure and a hierarchy. But generally speaking, myself and Brent, we're in the office. We're working with the accounts team and the operations manager and, the exec chef. And we sort of, that's the management team. And then everything sort of feeds into that. And we'll go and do services wherever we need to or have to. And then we sort of regroup and, meet the office. We spend a lot of time all with each other, which is good. That's how it sort of runs.
Where do you see modern Australian dining? Your group has been integral in the shaping of, and direction of where contemporary Australian food has been heading for the last decade. Where do you see it right now and where it's going?
Look, I think it's great at the moment. I think it's, I think there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of great talent within the industry. There's a lot of young chefs coming through. The borders have been shut, so you haven't been able to sort of go around and see what the rest of the world is doing, but do you really need to anymore? Like with technology, you can sort of see what everyone's doing all over the world anyway. So with Instagram and things like that. So I think I think it's an exciting time. I think there's a lot of great raw talent, and a lot of sort of people are opening really small restaurants and really small wine bars and venues. And it's sort of interesting. You've got the sort of the groups doing things, and then you've got the smaller guys doing things as well. So it is. I think now is going to be a really interesting time. I think we're in a good position for sure.
You've made an amazing impact and a real success with numerous restaurants. What's the best business advice you can give to young professionals looking to start their first restaurant?
Ooh. I don't know. I guess, look, I think the for me and Brent was, work hard and, try not to have, too much of an ego. But basically, back in the day, we just worked hard, worked really hard. We were the hardest working people in sort of the restaurants, and lead by example, try and have an idea of what's happening with the accounting side of the business and the cash flow, and you know, you've got to be across everything. You can't just be a chef who's just, you know, across food. You can't be a sommelier who just knows about wine. You know, I like the business part of the business is something that always intrigued me, in numbers and you know, all those little bits and pieces. That was something that I was always keen on. So that was something that I sort of got into. And you know, yeah, you've just got to be across really everything. And if you are opening a new restaurant, and you know, I wouldn't expand too quickly. You know, make sure you get the first one right first. And then if you're lucky enough to be in a position to do more, then go for it. But it's, I think the first restaurant you open is really key. Work hard, listen to people around you, and you know, get good people working for you.
Your role has changed so much over the years as the group has grown. But what is it that you love about what you do?
Oh, it's you know, it's great. We're very you know, very very lucky. You know, I work basically. I'm my own boss, I guess. And you can, you know, we've got five beautiful restaurants, beautiful spaces that you go to when you work. You know, we've got a team of great people who are really enthusiastic, who really motivate and inspire us to work hard. You know, they're the main things. You know, it's like the staff are like your family. You know, there's lots of different relationships within the business, and you know, you got friends, and you know what I mean. It's just, you know, there's the chitter chatter, and you know, when you're working a service, you know, it's, yeah, it can be stressful, but you know, everyone's working together as a team. It's really lucky to have, you know, five beautiful venues and a bunch of, you know, great committed people to work with.
You'll be opening the restaurant soon, and hopefully things will start to get back on track after COVID. What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, just basically, yeah, getting back into the restaurants, you know, serving people, having, you know, seeing people again. You know what I mean? Like people in a – I think it's going to – I think the first week or so is going to be really it's quite surreal. Like I think people are going to be like jumping out of their skin, and feel so sort of lucky to be back in a restaurant. I think people will be spending up on wine, and, you know, I think there'll be a real fantastic positive energy in here. So that's, you know, I'm looking forward to that, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing all our staff and you know, our regulars, and yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
Well, Nick, it's great to hear from you again and have you on the Luminaries on Deep in the Weeds today. Please keep in touch. Good luck, and we'll catch up again soon.
No worries. I'd love to, yeah, and looking forward to seeing everyone back in the restaurants. Can't wait.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.